Hey, rockers. Hey, rockettes. I'm telling you right here, right now, you are listening to the Power Rock Podcast with your host, Jim Madonna. You better crank it up. You're wondering who this is? I am Crazy Dave, former lead singer of Killinger. Let's rock, baby!
Hope you live my own tonight. The loneliness is gone. My evil mind is taking over. Imagine what we'll do.
Hey everyone, Jim Madonna here, your host of Power Rock Podcast. I would like to welcome you all to yet another episode, bringing you the best interviews from around the globe, from indie to mainstream. And friends, today's show is going to rock, because I have on the line Canadian hard rock vocalist, formerly of Killinger, Mr. David Crazy Man Williams. And friends, why this show is going to be so epic. This show was taking place in Duluth, Georgia, and it was the last leg of Killinger's United States tour, headlining, of course, another one of my favorite bands, Stryper. To see that show was just mind-blowing. So, David, welcome to the show, man.
What the hell is going on? All the way up here from Canada, Crazy Dave. How the hell are you?
I'm doing outstanding, brother. David, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for taking your time and giving me a call. You know, David, as I stated earlier, you know, it must have been quite a buzz to be able to tour with such an amazing band such as Stryper. I mean, seasoned musicians, all around great guys, honored to have had that opportunity to be at that show and to go backstage with you, with my wife, and to spend the quality time that we did. Those are moments that I will cherish forever, my friend.
Well, you know, I thank you so much for those ever kind words. And to whoever's listening, please, I'm telling you the truth. I didn't pay Jim anything to say that. I didn't pay. Wow, Jim, you know, it's my honor to be, you know, to still be friends after all this time, after we met in Duluth, Georgia, there with Stryper, and still be connected after all these years. And you know what? Thank you. I was just going up there and just kind of doing what I've got real comfortable with those guys, Stryper. So it was, it was great. It was that show where it's like, yeah, you get to throw it out there, your place that you've never been, you know, meeting people that, you know, you'd never, ever, you know, get the chance to being up here in Canada. But, you know, it was also that show where, you know, it was the last one of the tour. So it was a little bit bittersweet, but it felt like, you know, it was conquer. You know, we did something. Okay, now we can, you know, we know how to fight out there. You know, and Stryper, you know, is the one that, dare I say, gave us our stripes. You know, thank you, you know, dude, after all these years, man. It's great to, you know, great to hear your voice, Jim.
Yours as well. And once again, I sincerely thank you. And so, Dave, what I'm going to do, man, is I would like to turn the floor or turn the mic over to you. Why don't you go ahead and give the listeners some history about who David Williams is? And just, you know, just the floor is yours, my friend.
All right. Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, everybody pull up. Everybody got your drink in front of you, light your smoke. All right, well, it started a long, long time ago. A male and a female attracted to each other. From across the room, my dad was half drunk. My mom was willing. They decide that, you know what, I think it's time. They slipped into the washroom. Dad calls it his office. Mom calls it the powder room. He got to work. She got powdered. Next thing you know, here's Crazy Dave. Years and years later go on, and all of a sudden Dave decides he's going to be a singer in a rock and roll band. What sort of rock and roll? Hoodlum rock and roll. That's right, downtrodden rock and roll, gutter rock. That's all he can afford. I think it's only about a $10 cab ride to Gutterville. Anyway, rock and roll is no, listen. Okay, I'll stop screwing around. You know, I started singing when I was about 17, 18. And I know that might seem a little bit late for people, but my huge influence was, when I started singing, was Stryper, because I figured I needed a really clean, solid bass, you know, to build the house. And so I took that cue from Michael Sweet and then kind of branched off and did a little bit of that Freddie Mercury stuff, and, you know, and some Sticks, some Dennis DeYoung, all in that clean sort of thing, and getting my voice up there, doing Supertramp, and trying to get that, because I really, really, really am into Sticks. And so, you know, and not knowing who Stryper was before, I thought it was like, Sticks went heavy metal? Sticks went heavy metal? Oh, my God, this sounds good. Like, oh, they're a religious heavy metal band? whatever, it sounds great, let's rock. You know, so I didn't care, whatever, I'm in. Throw your Jesus at me, man. As long as he's got painted black fingernails, man, let's rock and roll. You know? So, you know, I started singing then, and I just, you know, I really just stuck to it, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time all these times, but it, you know, goes with real dedication, and what I really wanted, how bad did I want it, how bad was I going to, you know, stick my head out there, take the risk, be that person, like, you know, are you willing to sacrifice relationships and you know, geez, you know, where you live, maybe sacrifice a good meal here and there, go after it. And so I chose my path, and I was I won't call myself lucky, I'll just call myself that, you know, if you really want it that bad, you'll put yourself out there, and people will pick up on it, and it will happen. So in the brief history of me is just somebody that just chose his path and has never, ever looked in the rearview mirror and wondered what if everything is just moving forward. And it's been that way before Killinger. It's been that way since Killinger. And it's been that way after Killinger. So I'm just the lifelong musician that knows nothing else except getting up on stage and absolutely turning somebody's mood and turning their frown upside down and let them have a good time, escape for those few, you know, couple hours while they're there watching, and, you know, and then they can come back to reality. I just want to be people's escape. What it all comes down to. I'm not sure if I answered your question or 14 different questions, but there you go.
No, it was a great answer. And for the time I was there and my wife was there, you know, my wife actually was very sick. She kind of, for those couple hours watching you and, of course, you know, hanging out with you guys and Striper, she was in a lot of pain, I should say. And for those few hours, the pain was gone. She had joy in her heart. And I was just blown away by this little 5'2" guy going, holy shit, look at the power that comes out of his voice. I mean, you know, he goes from a really high octave and then he's just all over the board. Crazy Dave is a very fitting fucking name, because other than to call you other than crazy.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, the both of you, you know, you guys are great. But, you know, like the voice and everything, I mean, really, I just studied and just put my nose to the grindstone. And I studied from the best to try to get that voice. And now, you know, like even still, like, you know, around this city, I can't, it's rare that somebody says Crazy Dave without, hey, it's Crazy Dave! Like that at me all the time, because that's, you know, so it's kind of synonymous with me having that big voice. But I just study, dude. I just study. I'm like a great mechanic. I can sit in your car, take it around the block, and tell you it's your manifold. Your A-frame skirt. Yeah, whatever. It's going to cost $2,000. Whatever it is. You know, I'm that guy. I don't need, like, the computer. Like, I mean, obviously, now you need the computer and all that because of computer engine. But back in the day, 70s and stuff, the 80s, you know, where you had that engine where you could just drive it around. And that guy, I am that guy. So, you know, you want a good fucking time. You want to rock and roll. You call up the best that is out there. And if you can't get the best, then you call me.
I need to be honest about something. You know, of course, I listen to the disc all the time. But I got to be honest with you, man, the live performance, for me personally, this is just my opinion, sounds better than the...
Yes. And my explanation for that is simply this. A moment in time, you know, was captured. By no means am I comparing myself to Kiss. Let's get this straight. I am not comparing, or the band. I just want to use it as an example, is that Kiss, you don't know what the fuck they're like by listening to the first album, or listening to Hotter Than Hell, or listening to Dressed to Kill. You didn't know until you bought Alive. And then you got your face slapped. Like, oh my God. And you listen to that, and all of a sudden you hear the crowd, and you close your eyes, and you're in Kobo Arena. And you're there, and those lights go down, and you're right there listening to Strutter. You're listening to Cold Gin, the bass solo, you know, everything. You were right there. It didn't really capture exactly what it was. And even the albums after kind of really didn't capture their live feel. So I describe it like that, is that in that moment in time in the studio, there's only so much that you could really get out, so to speak, with, you know, without being in that situation. And you're not in that situation. You're in a room. It's very stale, you know, like, you know, well, smells like beer, but, you know, that sort of stale. But, you know, it's you, there's not that, you don't have that energy of or expectation. You know, when you pull up, like, yeah, it's Duluth, Georgia tonight, man. Oh, yeah, look at this place. And you want, you, this is funny. You know what? I just pulled out of my collection because I'm a mad collector, man, mad collector of stuff. And I've been that way since I was a kid. And I've got boxes and boxes of stuff that I put away. And every once in a while, I'll open one up and it's like Christmas. So since 2011, I've been holding on to a poster and I haven't seen it for about 7 years. And I finally pulled it out of storage, and it's got a little rip in it, but otherwise pretty much mint condition how it came off the wall. I've got the Wild Bills striper with Killinger, big banner poster from Wild Bills. And I was just like, wow. So it's really cool to be doing this interview right now when I just pulled that out. And actually, when I get home, I'll take a picture of it and send it to you guys.
I would like that. I'd appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
Dave, let me ask you this, man. I mean, you know, you talked about that you started late, you know, around 17 years old. But what do you think was really that defining moment in your life that made you want to become a rock and roll singer?
Oh, wow, that's an easy story, and I've told it numerous times, and I don't mind telling it because it is that defining moment. It is that sort of thing. Well, so, as a kid, you know, there's a lot of distractions as you're a kid, you know, especially in the 70s. There was, you know, $6 Million Man, Stretch Armstrong, all these weird sort of things. And, you know, yeah, I'm talking real old school here because I'm a little bit old. But, you know, all those sort of distractions, music wasn't really, you know, when I was about, you know, six, you know, five, in between five and seven, you know, music really wasn't that thing. You know, other than, you know, whatever sort of, you know, Bugs Bunny or, you know, that sort of stuff. There's nothing really of any sort of, you know, wild sort of thing that I did other than the usual kid stuff in the 70s. But there was this one time that my mother and I think my cousin, maybe my aunt, a couple of us, we all went out to the mall, and there was a record store. Everybody's in the record store. I'm following along. And I see, you know, my aunt is getting a record. My mom picked out a couple records, you know, Fleetwood Mac or something like this. And, you know, and my cousin, you know, picks up, you know, like, some Elton John or something, like, you know. And now I'm starting to get, you know, little kid, I throw a tantrum, right? So because I'm pissed off, like, everybody's getting albums. I'm not getting an album, right? And she, you know, well, go get yourself an album then. You know, you shut the hell up, you little shit. And so I went walking around, and I saw this album. I went, oh, and I looked at it, went, okay, this is for me. And I gave it to my mom, and she paid for it. And we got in the car, left the mall, went back, you know, went back home. And as soon as I got into the house, and I mean, as soon as that door opened, boom, there's like a trail of fire behind me. And I was in my room. I opened up my fold down record player. You know, that's a little box. You know, it's got a little clip. You open it up, I put the little needle on it. And it was the very first Kiss album. The very best babysitter my mom pocket has ever invested in was that fucking first album when I was about 6 or 7 years old. Yeah, so I was like, and my mom saw how I gravitated towards the sort of, I guess, shock rock is what, you know, back then, acid rock or whatever the fuck they called it back then, you know. So when I was like, so that was about 6 years old. So when I was about seven, I'd say about a year later, I won't say it was my birthday or anything, but she just got me another album. And the next album that I got was Alice Cooper, Killer. So,
oh, wow.
You know, looking at Killers, yeah. and Alice Cooper, and then so I'm listening to all this, you know, I'm listening to Gene Simmons, you know, singing. I'm listening to Gene Simmons talk about anal sex, you know, on the first album, having no clue. And then the next album I get that my mom, you know, I'm listening to fucking Dead Babies, you know, from Alice Cooper. You know, I was like, oh, alrighty then. And now you have Crazy Dave. Yeah. So, yeah, that was basically my first two albums, the defining moment of what I wanted to do. Now it was just a matter of just growing up and then finding myself into that situation. Like, how do I get that? How do I be Kiss? How do I be those people? And then when I stumbled into a bar, you know, without ID, sneak into a bar, you know, I saw this band, and I still talk to the singer to this day. To this day, I get like hang up and give him a call right now. The guy that I saw, he was in an Ozzy Osbourne tribute band. And I got into the bar. Okay, I'm awkward. I'm 18. I have no clue what to do. I'm scared, you know, a little bit. I go grab some beer, and I go up, and I kind of just lean against a pole right in the dance floor. And I stand there all night. Like, why the fuck do you keep standing there? You know, because I'm scared. I don't know what to do. But I stood there. So I watched, you know, the band come out. They did their first two sets in their regular clothing. And then, the third set is the big Aussie tribute sort of thing. So I didn't know that. I did not know it was an Aussie tribute. I had no clue. I just thought it was a regular type band. And they're, really good, doing great songs. So the break in between the second and third set was quite lengthy. And I'm like, starting to get a little bit stir crazy. Come on, man, what the fuck? And then all of a sudden lights go down and this organ music hits. I'm like, boom, like that's like Aussie stuff. Like, oh, what's going on here? And, he traveled with a coffin and they, these guys in these cloaks, whatever, druid looking guys come and they pull out this coffin. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? And the music starts and it's, I don't know. I don't know. So he opens up the coffin. He sits up and goes, "Wah!" He's doing his Aussie thing. And I am like, I'm in my mind. I am pinwheeling backwards. And it was like right there. I was like, oh, this is where you start. So like everything that like a learning curve, like it was me stumbling on it and then realizing, oh, this is where you started. This is how you start and get your thing. Right. Because obviously Kiss had to do it in something like this to get up there. So I just made the connection really fast. And like I say, that moment of seeing that, like that first record, just stumbling in the bar when I was 18, like I started singing, but really didn't kind of know like really how to fucking get it done. But doing that one act of sneaking into that bar and seeing that guy, his name is Mike Braniff, by the way, and he's on my friends list. If anybody's on my friends list, if you're listening to, you can add me. It's David Williams. And I swear to God, the guy is absolutely amazing. And he's still singing and playing and singing for a supper to this day. One of the rare few out there doing it all the time. So that guy, I owe a lot. And it was me coming up as a singer, kind of getting my chops and all that sort of stuff, that I finally, was able to find somebody that would kind of give me a little bit of direction. And that was Mike. And he wasn't, I won't say that he was like, took me under his wing, because he really had no time, but he was the first guy to kind of, bring me aside and tell me, this is, it kind of works like this. This is how this goes. Don't try to reach for that when you can say it this way. It's like Mike taught me that saying of there's a dad bull and a son and his kid, and they're standing on top of the hill, and the son says to the dad, "Hey, dad, you see all those cows down there in the valley? Let's run down there and fuck one of those cows." And the dad says to the kid, "No, son, how about we walk down there and we fuck them all?"
So that's
kind of what,
man,
he said. Like, don't run and go screaming into it. Ease into it. Old man into a hot tub. And so it was stuff like that he showed me that molded me as a singer performer. And he was also that one. I mean, performance, you talk about, the performance that you saw. I mean, it was just natural for me I just let my, just whatever comes out. Like, there's no rehearsing. There's no, me being in some dance studio where one wall is a big freaking mirror, and I've got on, some leg warmers. Like, there's no watching. It just happens, right? You just let it go. It happens.
You just become you.
It was those things that define the moment that Mike Braniff seeing that first thing, that first record, that's what it all got started. So really the first band that I really concentrated after all that stuff was Stryper. And then that's where I started my voice. And basically, everything else is history after that.
Great
when I got a hold of Stryper and I heard that, I'm just like, oh my God. And the first song I heard was Soldiers Under Command. And I'm listening and I'm like, listen to that snare drum. Listen to those guitars. Like, is this like Iron Maiden? Like, what the hell is this? And I heard it. And I was brought up in semi sort of religious school and stuff like that. It's not something that I follow, but I'm very identifiable. So, was I a big Christian guy or anything like that? No, not at all to this day. No, but I very much, I know. And do I believe? Absolutely. But that being said, that had nothing to do with the music.
Now, Dave, I want to ask, I had chosen a few songs off. It was a really hard choice for me. The first song that I had chosen is called "We Are Here." Can you give the listeners some history about that song?
Well, I can tell you this about that song. It came when we were, when this Killinger thing started, a lot of things were really off the cuff. And some of the songs on the album were very much off the cuff, and so to speak, that we weren't rushed, that some things just happened and some things changed. Like the song I Don't Care is completely different. The cosmetics of the song completely changed, the lyric content, the title, but the music stayed the same. So, you know, there's some things that just change naturally, that, you know, when you're doing the writing process, you're chasing one thing, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's something else that pops up that seems more viable for your efforts. So it became that song where we're nearing the end of the album, and we're kind of like half writing, half doing whatever pre-production we have. So that song, it came down to the last few songs of the album, and we're, you know, and the music's there, and, you know, I got an idea for the song. But I'm looking at my producer, Rick Plester, who produced the whole album and, you know, was an extreme help to us achieving that goal of getting that album done. And I can't thank him enough. But I looked at Rick. I went, Rick, man, you know, I am burnt out. I am spent and dink. I can't get it hard anymore. I don't know what to do with this song. I don't know what to do. And he looked at me and goes, ah, Dave, well, you know what? How about you just, you know, it was like 1 a.m, I've been in the studio, you know, for like, you know, 7 hours already. And just like, he goes, you know what, you go home, maybe I'll see if I can come up with something. I'm like, you know, thank you, dude. Thank you, man. Because I just got nothing left in the tank. I need like a break. And I can't even believe that we're doing this, you know, all this is getting done. So I went home and I went back to the studio next day, you know, bright and early at 6 p.m. And I walk in and he gets there and he goes, okay, I got it. He goes, I want to kind of, I did a bed track for it so you can kind of listen to it. Yeah. And here's the lyrics. And this is what I was like, okay, dude, this is, all right, let's start punching it in and get out a demo version and then we'll work on it. And the song really came together pretty quickly. So it was just one of those songs where I was not really overly involved in the writing of that particular song. It came down to Kevin and Rick really doing the music. And then it came down to melody and word choice. The lyrics were pretty much written for me by the producer. And he said, here you go, because it just, like I said, it was the end of the album. It was one of the last songs, and it was one of those songs where I just didn't know what to do. So, you know, I thank Rick for that. But, you know, I got in there and goes, you know, put your spin on it. And I spun that motherfucker, and there's We Are Here to Rock You!
And, dude, that is one of, personally, my favorite songs. To actually watch you sing that song live is epic, man. I mean, it's just like I stated earlier in the interview, the energy, the way you work the crowd, kick-ass tune. And I'm going to tell you what, brother, let's go ahead and let the listeners hear. We Are Here with Killinger. Yeah. Crank it up on Power Rock Podcast.
You wanna send her away.
We can't wait to see you. We are here to make you feel good. We are here to rock you. We are here to bring you the light. Are you ready to receive? We are here to make you feel good.
Welcome back. We are with David, the crazy man, Williams. And David, absolutely love it.
I love the song, too, and I haven't heard it for a while. It's good to hear that song.
You gotta check it out, man. You gotta check it out.
Well, if I could say something to the both of you, I met you guys in 2011, and I have seen through Facebook, I think we both watched each other go through our ups and downs.
You know, after hearing that song, I want to break away from the Killinger album for a moment. And I want you to tell the listeners about your new band and your new project, man. I mean, of course, I haven't heard anything, but if it's anything what I have seen you do, I'm pumped already. And I can't wait to hear the disc. So why don't you go ahead and, you know, let the listeners know where you're at with that project?
I know it's been a long time. I'm pulling it like a big Def Leppard here, and it's even longer than Def Leppard. Not that I am Def Leppard. Please let me get that straight. I am just talking about the timeline. After Killinger, for me, we had a three-album deal, all right? Our first album was Honored. We had two more albums to go. We were writing. Some of those songs never obviously saw the light of the day. Now, with the direction that I have with the new band and the new players, and I will name them Des Black, Sawbones, otherwise known as Cary Grant, all right, he's the bass player, Des Black, the guitar player, and Doug Miola. And you can check out Doug Miola on DougMiola.com. There's my drummer. So I have got together a stellar band. So explaining about the writing is, when Killinger stopped, that outlet for me to write and be able to get it out. Because if I'm going to put out the effort and do that thing, I want people to hear it, right? And I just didn't want to be an internet guy. I wanted more. And realizing that, you know, after all that sort of money is gone and everything, that's all I really have. And being that and me leaving the band for very good reason, because the band wasn't doing anything. I asked and asked and pleaded with the guys. There was pleading, can we do something? And nothing was happening. I went through something health-wise that was a big fucking scare for everybody around me and everybody that knows me. But I came back tenfold, and I wanted to do something, and I just didn't find the support. And that was the moment that I left the band. And so at that point, it was like, next time I want to write something, I know that all these people are expecting something from me and are expecting some Killinger type thing. Now, of course, it's been about 7 years, 8 years you know, since I wrote that stuff. Now, in that time, I've matured in the sense of from that album. And the only thing that I've done from that album has gone up. So are we writing? Absolutely. Do we have something in the bag right now? That we'll, yes, absolutely. Is there something that we could put out? Well, the song that we have, that one of the strong ones that we have, it's one of those ones where you want to hold on to it just for a sec. It's not our lead-off tune, but I tell you, I can send it to you, Jim, personally, and I'll let you hear it and let you and your wife listen to it. And if I could say this, it is a step up from what I've done. And I'm not disrespecting what I've done with the other guys or anything. It is me. I have the tattoo on my left arm. It is Killinger. But you know, naturally, your progression is to go up and move forward and to blossom, be that better flower, you know, smell, stink up the room. You know, and that's, I think we are definitely achieving that. Like I said, I have some great guys by me that are absolutely dedicated to their craft and really, really solid musicians. And I can't say enough about my bass player, because me and him are like, you know, two peas in a pod, you know, when it comes to music and stuff. And it's like, all right, name this Kiss song. Oh, wow. You know, let me know. Wow, that was a good one. All right, name this Striper song. Like, wow, dude, that's crazy. Well, where'd you get that? You know, makes me want to rock. You know, okay, that's cool. How about this one? And then play something, you know, off the Elder. You know, like, with it, like, I just got some great guys. So, sorry, I buddy-holed a little bit. About the music, it's finally, I think it's time for me to be able to do something. And when I do something, I'm only going to put it out in little bits. I don't have the money to do that sort of thing just yet. And it's not, does Dave need a donation? No, I don't need a donation at all. I will do this and get it out. And when you guys hear it, you'll understand why we waited and why we are taking the approach with it that we do. Because there's other bands that have been doing something right now. And one of those great bands, and they're really young kids. I'm their dad, goddammit. But they're called Greta, what's her name? Okay, you know that, right? So Hansel and Gretel. Yeah, that's right. I'm fucking giving them a plug, and I'm busting their balls at the same time. So Hansel and Gretel there. They are a great band, bringing up that revival of the Led Zeppelin sort of sound. Great band out there. I like to see that sort of stuff. I like to see the older bands put out albums. There's nothing like hearing a song from a new Dawkins song, a new Night Ranger song, you know, like something new from Yngwie Malmsteen, you know, everything. That's where I lie in my music, and that's where I will always kind of hold into that thing. So I'm just telling you about the influences of everything that's gone on since I've left Killinger. So all that sort of stuff, and I've really turned into I'm looking into more of that gypsy sort of thing. Now, I'm not saying I'm going full blown, but the Black Crowes have done a revamp inside me, and I've done that more of that 70s, like I get away a bit from the pomp and get more into that gut root great fucking song. You know, I want to write those great 70s 80s songs, those timeless things where you just hear it and it brings you back. You know, like listening to Reeling in the Years by Steely Dan. You know, now if you hear that all of a sudden, boom, you're on the beach. All of a sudden, you know, you could be having the shittiest day. You put on that song, and that song breaks out the sunshine. It's all of a sudden, wow, everybody's smiling. Nobody's, you know, there's no more negativity. It's just beautiful, beautiful stuff. And that's really what I'm trying to, and I've always been, but I'm really trying to get into that sort of thing now.
And you know, if I
have the manpower by me to do that, so
right. And you know,
go ahead.
That statement that you had just made leads me to my next question. And if I do believe the answer is going to be part of what you just said, and the question is this: in your opinion, what defines a successful record?
What defines a success? Well, that depends on the listener, right? I mean, I'm very grateful, and it makes me smile when I, hey, Dave, you're a rock star, when I hear that. But I can't sit there and claim it, right? So, I mean, I could claim I'm the king of England, doesn't mean I am,
right? But you made a statement about Steely Dan. You know, you said you remember when you hear Steely Dan. So, you know, if in 20 years or 10 years, you know, somebody was listening to Killinger and you know, heard, you know, holding on or something like that. And it brought back a great memory in that sense. Wouldn't that be a successful record as well?
Absolutely. As soon, if I can tell you this story, you know, when we were on tour with Stryper, and then we went back to the to Baltimore the second time with Volbeat on the Volbeat tour, and you know, we're the opening band for the Volbeat tour, which was Killinger, and then Iced Earth, and then Hell Yeah, and then Volbeat. That was the lineup, and that we did coast to coast. And when we hit Baltimore, because we'd been there before, I looked down and I'm watching people in the front, not only just sing the words, but they're also doing like video, sort of acting me out in the video, like how I like two or three, and I you know put up the horns. You know, if you watch the Holding On video, you'll know what I'm talking about. But I watched the people in the front doing that, and that's just what do I define as successful? You only try to write something that you hope people will like, but it's something that you put out. It's your baby, right? And so if people like it, if they want it, and they are gravitated, that is I won't say a success. It's not that. To turn people for the moment, you've won the battle, but it's not the war.
Gotcha. I get it.
To make people really love you, just write and connect as a person on a human level with them, and that is timeless. My manager's in here right now, and even him, he knows that the value of a song and where it comes from, and where you have to have that bass root. Big guy on the ska, on that sort of on that reggae feel, and where stuff like Bob Marley, you can hear traits of that through music today and stuff like that, because you have to start somewhere,
right?
And that's what I'm saying. I've started somewhere,
right?
And you kind of hear that, and now I'm just about to.
Dave, the next song I'd like to talk about on the album is called "Listen." Can you give the listener some history about that song?
Oh, the song "Listen." Well, another song where we're in that writing stage. We're in the studio. Things are a little bit off the cuff, and so be it. Comes to the slow song, and I'm like, we're doing a slow song, and everything is rock and roll, straight up, you know, rah, 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 and then all of a sudden, boom, slow song, and I'm like, okay, let's do this slow song. It was one of those things where I walked in, the music's already ready, it's all right, Dave, come in, do your thing on it. I sit down, I listen to it, pardon the pun, I take a listen to listen, and I am not feeling it. I am totally not feeling it. I get the producer, Rick, damn it, man, play it again. You know, and the guitar player, Dr. Marin, Kevin, the doc, he wrote some sort of lyrics for me as a bass to kind of, you know, and I looked at him, I kind of refined him a little bit, and, you know, to what he wrote. And it wasn't connecting, man. And I'm listening, I'm like, you know, Rick, play it again. And the song just didn't happen. It wasn't happening. I couldn't click. I'm like, oh my God, this is like, I know I need to put something down here. I know I have to put something down, and I'm just not finding it. And I'm relaying all this to Rick, and you know, I was like, dude, I've got nothing for this. It was like, almost like we are here, but it wasn't that I had nothing. It's just I couldn't click in. I know there's something here, but I can't find it. And you know, as a discussion, you know, between me and producer going back and forth, you know, I'm telling Rick, I don't think. You know, can we trash this one? I'm trying to do now. I'm trying to scheme, like, how do we get rid of this song?
Right.
How do we, like, oops, I tripped. I broke a nail. You know, something. To get out of this song. You know, something. You know, maybe I'll fall head first and crack my temple on the corner of the table. You know, something to get out of it. You know, I didn't want to do the song. And Rick, you know, looks at me and goes, "You know what, Dave? He's probably going to be a little bit disappointed, but you know what? Well, let's just move forward. Maybe we can, you know, find something else and write something else." And he said that, and I'm like, oh, fuck. All right, dude, you know what? Play it back one more time. And he played it, and my mouth opened up. And he looked at me after it was done. He goes, all right, do it again, and just kind of get that part at the end there. I'm like, okay. I sang it again. He goes, oh, all right, can you just do a little bit more of an ad-lib at the end sort of thing? I'm like, sure. So I did an ad-lib, and goes, okay, we're done. I go, what? He goes, we're done. What do you mean we're done? He goes, that was a song.
And
like, I didn't even get to sing it really all the way through. Like, he goes, no, you did, and you're done. And it's over.
I'm telling you, man, it is a beautiful, well done song.
Yeah.
And
it was one of those things where, like I said, I didn't have it, and what came out was what you hear, and boom, it was so good. Like I said, the producer went, "We're done here, dude. You did it. You just what we needed for the song, you just knocked it out of the park. Thank you."
And
I
was like, "All right,
I did it.
Yeah, you did. And here it is. Listen, yeah. With Crazy Dave on Power Rock Podcast. Crank it up." Talked about a few things that have been, positive and negative throughout, your career. But my question is this. Has there ever been a point in your life where you have lost the interest in playing or singing? And if so, what did you do to rekindle your passion for it?
That's a very easy question to answer because it's never, ever, I've never, if I didn't have music, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. Music is my solace. Music is my, my umbrella. Music is my bed at night. Music is my, my sunshine in the morning. Music is my whole life. I've always been around it. I've always done it. It's what moves me. It's what, keeps me going in slight depression. Yes, you can find that being a musician. Oh, okay, so things aren't working out. This gig fucking fell through. Oh, I'm not getting that money. Somebody ripped me off. There's a lot of stuff that goes down, but we keep doing it for the love of music because the music is what pulls you through all that stuff, builds your character, makes you a better musician. I'm not sure if I ever lost it. I would like to say that there was times where I went, I'm not sure if this is going to keep going, but in my mindset, I was always, you know, wheels always spinning, always moving forward, regardless of what has been in front of me. I persevered, and only because I made sure to make it happen. I was not going to be pushed aside. I was not going to be, you know, an afterthought.
Awesome.
And you do that by the performance. Your performance lives and speaks for itself. You're only as good as your last gig. And that's what people know.
Wow, that's a great analogy, man. I've never heard
that.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. Dave, leading up to the next song I'd like to talk about, and
yes,
of course, probably one of your most popular songs. It's called...
Oh, here we go.
Yep, Holding On. How about some history, man?
Holding On, great song. You know what? It was the first single that we did here in Canada. It does have an accompanying video. Accompanying video? Did I say that right? Anyway, I've had so many guys like, hey, man, can I get the number of that one cop? I'm like, all right. Okay,
yeah, right.
Calm down, dude.
Hello.
You know, a great video. It was shot in Toronto. We did it with some people from Vision Entertainment. A great video company out in Toronto. We did it all in one day, started at like 7 in the morning, finished at 11 at night. It was a big, huge production. The whole video was shot basically, like as you see it, is how it was shot, basically. Everything, except for the start. We did that at the end, like the spray painting. But everything was shot in succession over one day in Toronto. Great song. The song was written, I was having a hard time with a girl at the time. Oh, go figure, a relationship song, David. No, not another relationship song. Yes, another relationship song, damn it. And here's this one. And so me being Canadian, we have another great Canadian female artist, and her name's Alanis Morissette. And she did some stuff in the 80s, 90s, and then all of a sudden she did this breakout album, I think everybody knows, called Jagged Little Pill, and her first single was called You Oughta Know. And she was bitching at this guy, fucking, you know, whatever she did, it was just like, oh man, fucking dude, whatever you did to this girl, holy fuck, revenge is best served over the airwaves, I guess.
Right.
You know, now, so she absolutely just, you know, she was pissed off and she's not taking it anymore. So I kind of like, well, if she can do it, maybe I can kind of vent like that, but vent in a way where it's positive. Like, yes, it's very, you know, like, yeah, you did that, but I'm going to rise above it. And so I kind of wrote it off that, and that's Holding On. And so the lyrics, I'm not sure if they make sense. They sound okay.
They sound great. And here it is, man, Holding On with Killinger. Crank it up.
Walking on me, there's another girl to take your place, maybe two or three, so don't stop thinking that you changed my mind, well don't say that you love me, well I heard that line, well your best friend came over. Today, and we had a little All of a sudden we were getting on.
Again, we are back. And David, what we're going to do is we are going to go ahead and we're going to close the show out. But what I would like to do is ask you one more question. What type of legacy or how do you want to be remembered by your friends, family, and fans when you pass on?
You know, that's a great question. How do I want to be remembered? I think I'm remembered already. I'm remembered right now that you know, it's the relationships that you make. It's how you treat people. You know, none of this you can take to the grave. You ain't taking your car to the grave. You ain't taking any of that. All you have is your experiences, and that's what life is based off. I'm not sure, other than reproduction, what is really important on this planet. Other than entertaining ourselves, friendship, being good to your fellow human beings. That's how I want to be remembered, as Crazy Dave. He was a great guy that always partied, was there to party, but always a guy that knew how to pull it back, a guy that was professional, a guy that, you know, knew his stuff, but a guy that was genuine enough to keep his, you know, feet grounded and know that, you know, there's no such thing as a big rock star, because everybody has to sit down and take a shit unless you're standing up. And that is unnatural, to stand up and take a shit. You're not a musician. Everybody sits to take a shit. We're all human beings here. We have to get along on this planet. And the first thing that you do is stop thinking like you're the only person that lives on this planet. There's other people here. We all need help. You're not the fucking first person to say, I'm here, I rule the roost. Oh, no, you don't rule the roost. We rule the planet. We are the human beings. How do I want to be remembered? I want to be remembered as that person that brings people together, not tears them apart. By wow. Music, by rock and roll.
David, I got to tell you, man, that was an amazing answer. I mean, you know, I've asked so many artists that that same question, and you know, I get a lot of good feedback. I get a lot of, you know, well... What a great answer, man.
I'll say it. I'm not even sure what I said. I'll go back and listen to it when you post it.
All right. Well, Dave, here we go. You know what? I want to say this to you, my friend. We're going to go ahead and we're going to end the show. And I just truly and sincerely wish you the utmost success, man, in all that you do. And I choose to use the word pray, if I may, that God just continues to use you mightily, that, you know, that he gives you what you want to do to entertain. You're an entertainer. And I hope that the doors keep opening up for you, and that whether it's through music or relationships, man, I just really, really, really wish the best for you and completely and totally respect our friendship. And, you know, because we're here for a very short time, man. You know, I've changed my tune drastically. And with that being said, man, just thank you so much, man.
No, you know, thank you. And I want to thank your absolutely beautiful wife, Jennifer. Thank the both of you. Meeting you guys way back on the Striper tour and having great friends like you, and always once in a while keeping in contact, throwing smiles at each other. You know, life is about that. You make people smile. Even just little hints of this, that, here and there can brighten up somebody's day. And that's what Jim, his wife, Jennifer, and myself continue to do to this day. And we will never stop. It's always nice to hear from you. And thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to let me talk and let me say my shit and be Crazy Dave on your show. The pleasure is all mine, and the honor is through the roof. Thank you very much, Mr. Madonna.
I'm truly humbled by your kind words. Well, there you have it, an interview with Crazy Dave, formerly of Killinger. What we're going to do is we are going to go ahead and play one more track. This one here is called Illuminati. Peace.
To the youth, revolution today.